Hi, I'm Kate.
And I'm Lori. We've always thought that the most compelling story strikes the perfect balance between an honest look at the mess of life and the humor that can be found in the mess. To be perfectly honest, we don't really know how to live life without both the humor and the authenticity.
Our podcast might be a little bit of whiplash at times. We can spin from hard and deep to humor and laughing on a dime. The hard will be really hard, and the truths we share are the ugliest of humanity. We don't intend to make it seem like it's all fine or to pretty up the pain, but we also know that the joy we found is all the more profound because of the pain.
So we hope you can stick with us through the ugly, because there will also be joy and hope and humor. Welcome to The Ugly Truth About the Girl Next Door.
Hi, welcome back to our podcast, The Ugly Truth About the Girl Next Door. I'm Kate.
And I'm Lori.
So today we're talking about, so April is National Child Abuse Prevention Month. And, you know, we want to have a conversation today kind of about what that really means. Like, I think a lot of people are like, oh yeah, like wear whatever color it is, you know, National Child Abuse Month, National whatever month. It was Human Trafficking Awareness Month in January. And it's like, oh yeah, wear blue, you know. But like, the reality of what that means and the reality of the child abuse statistics. And then to take it a step further as to, if we understand what the statistics say about child abuse, about sexual abuse, what does that look like for now educating and building this army of helpers, right? What does that, how does that translate out in the real world?
So I think because I've been doing this for so long, so 30 plus years, I have been living in this world where I sort of have, Kate's talked about the split reality, but as a professional in the mental health world, I have kind of a split reality too, because obviously I spend my days talking to people about their obviously very private information that I am not sharing with the world. But I'm still carrying that stuff. And so, you know, when I go to a dinner party or a family gathering, you know, how was your week? No, actually, I just wanted to say,
I was like, oh, okay.
I did dinner parties.
When's the last time you were at a dinner party? I don't either. So it's not because I don't either.
Okay. Family gatherings, right? Or anywhere that I'm out in public, you know, people, hey, how you doing? How was your week? You know, I have to be just like, oh, my week was good. Thanks for asking. Because it would obviously be illegal for me to share people's information and completely unethical, but also nobody wants to hear about my week. Nobody really wants to hear, oh, well, you know, I sat with a whole bunch of people who are carrying around incredible burdens from their childhood. And some people don't want to hear or can't hear about it, don't want to hear about it because they're carrying their own burdens that are not healed. And so it's way too much for them to hear it. And some people just frankly have been in their own bubble long enough that it is comfortable in there. They don't have to, you know, open themselves up. It's difficult for them to even want to open themselves up to hear about some of these really hard things. And so I guess part of what we're hoping that we can help people do is take it from like a soundbite, like it's Child Abuse Prevention Month. And, you know, yeah, isn't that terrible that kids are getting abused? We want to take it from a soundbite to make it something that is kind of more concrete, especially for people who are maybe not as close to that world, whether they did not experience themselves or they are not in the sphere where they would be either volunteering with or working with kids who've had hard things happen. You might not realize that when, okay, so this is something I've often talked about with foster and adoptive parents about the fact that you may know that the child in your care was neglected, for example, that they had drug or alcohol addicted parents and they were neglected. But are you making the leap emotionally and cognitively to really play the movie of what that means for a child? Because what that really means for a child, again, this is 30 years of hearing these things, is, okay, the child you're caring for is currently four. They had a two-year-old sibling and a newborn sibling. And we neglect on that level sometimes means your birth parent left you for 12 hours, 40, 24 hours, 48 hours alone. So you're the four-year-old and you're trying to care for your two-year-old sibling and a baby, listening to the baby scream and cry in the crib, but you're four. What are you going to do about that? But the two-year-old sibling, you guys are hungry. You're trying to climb up on the countertop to try to get to the Kool-Aid, which is the only thing that's available in the house to eat. There's nothing really in the fridge. So are we really thinking about how scary that is for a kid? They don't really know when their birth parent's going to come back. They don't know when it's going to get better. What's the next terrible thing that's going to happen? It's not just I know that my child was neglected. It's important that we kind of make that something that our heart can connect to. Otherwise, it's way too easy to just be like, oh yeah, that's unfortunate, and not feel compelled to invest ourselves in a solution or showing up for people and showing up for the helpers, right? Frankly, okay, this is a little side note. I know too many foster and adoptive parents who are out there who have said yes to the really hard thing, that there's no community around them. Like, they have said yes to trying to care for these kids, but their church is not showing up for them. Sometimes their family members aren't showing up for them.
Okay, let me ask this question, not to like divert you, because we're going to talk about this later. But what about the people who are showing up for a child, but are not, have not healed their own trauma and are therefore not equipped?
So yes, there are absolutely, of course, there are people who are some in their kind of bubble, and some people who have a hard time facing the stuff because it's too triggery. It's way too close to their own experience that it becomes emotionally overwhelming. And that's understandable.
Right.
But those are also the people who tend to have the best spidey sense about when something's going on for a child, because they're just subtle indicators that they recognize because they lived it.
Yeah.
So, right. We understand that. It can be very overwhelming to think about. Mm-hmm. Some people find it just way too unbelievable. Right. And we've gotten that a lot. And honestly, that's such a frustrating thing for me. Some people are like, okay, well, we know that you've given all this information and the corroboration and all the things, but it's just way too unbelievable that that kind of thing could go on and law enforcement isn't like doing anything about it. Yeah. Really? Read the papers, read the news, read the stuff, read the statistics. And by the way, walk a mile in my shoes of 30 years of every time I think I have heard as much as could be heard about the terrible things that happen to children. There's always something worse. And honestly, in my experience, kids, even when they get into foster care, it's probably 5 years at least before their parents hear about the reality of how bad it really was. Whatever got them into foster care is the tip of the iceberg.
I just to go back to your law enforcement statement, we haven't really talked too much publicly about law enforcement for a lot of reasons. But yeah.
25 out of every 1,000 sexual assaults sees a jail cell.
Yeah. When you talk about one of the most violent crimes there is, right, of sexual abuse, of sexual assault, of rape, trafficking, to know that the statistics are staggering and truly take your breath away, how many of these offenders ever see jail time. Yeah.
We're not even talking about the fact that, you know, even when there are sex trafficking arrests, they're typically not arresting the buyers. They're often not arresting the traffickers. There are still way too many states where who's getting arrested are the ones that are being trafficked.
I just read something on Instagram that another anti-trafficking organization had posted in California, and it said that California state law at this point in 2023 still does not recognize human trafficking as a violent crime. Make it make sense, you know? So again, law enforcement is not the say on the end all. And unfortunately, the buck also does not stop with them. There is an entire legal system around them that is unfortunately very broken.
Also, I think important to go back to kind of what I said at the beginning, that we need to like expand our understanding and think about, well, really, what's the impact on a child because of being abused, neglected, sexually abused, whatever that is, because we're partly talking here today about what are the long-term implications for the now adults who were abused as children, who did not get the help that they need, who are now the ones who maybe are the people that are there when a child has a need, right? So let's remember what we've talked about before, right? We've talked about the very real impact on a developing brain of chronic stress, right? So a child who is being abused, neglected, sexually abused. Again, remember, a child who's being sexually abused in their family, it's not just this discrete, like, this happens to me. The reality is a parent who is sexually abusing a child is not a good parent anyway. They're not safe people. And so that is pervasive throughout a child's life, right? So there's brain impact on that, and also disrupted patterns of being able to build connected relationship with people. They never feel safe. If you're being abused in a caregiver relationship, where's your safe place as the kid? Maybe school, which is why it's so important that we make school a safe place, but that's a big burden to put on schools to be like all things to all children, right? But it is one of the things that they offer. Kids are naturally inclined to blame themselves. And so there's a whole shame cycle, right? Kids need to believe in part because their survival depends on their caregiver being benevolent, but also kids are programmed to believe kind of the world revolves around them. If you've been around children, you understand that that's true, right? And who is there to, when something bad happens, so I've talked before about my daughter has epilepsy. Her life was not easy, but you know what she had? She had a lot of people around her who were able to show her that she was valuable and to reassure her that she was not going to be alone in her hard things and that it was going to be okay in whatever way that looked like. We were going to figure it out. Kids who are being abused by their caregiver don't have any of that. Mm-hmm. There's a huge impact of that. So then those children grow up and they become the adults that are in a child's world.
Yeah. So I think that's where we want to like land with our conversation today is the idea that now there's this generation of women, my generation, your generation, and even generations above us, that probably have unresolved trauma. Again, given the statistics, right? You're talking about 1 in 4 women, 1 in 6 men, and how these women maybe struggle to help, right?
And anecdotally, can you kind of talk about what that's been like now that you've got this public platform?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, well, a lot of things. That, first of all, this idea that, and again, this is kind of an unfolding process for me as we have had this public platform, as we have, you know, talked about these types of things and the statistics and all the ways that people should help and can help. And I keep asking myself the question, what would I have wanted, right? Like, what would I have wanted any one of these adults to have done? Because for a long time, I didn't know. Like, it was my fault that I couldn't get help. It was because of me. It was because I did something wrong.
And it was that ambivalence of like, help me, but don't look over here.
The push pull of, yeah, like, please get me out of the situation, but also please don't, because that doesn't end well, right? Like, there's no real light at the end of the tunnel. It's just this dark tunnel. And maybe, I don't know what that looks like. But now kind of moving out of that space and into, they should have helped. There should have been help. There was all these signs and red flags, and there was all this information. And to hear, you know, the teachers at CCA say, we believed her, but we didn't know what to do. And the rage that comes from, what do you mean you believed me and you didn't know what to do? But so then I have to, as an adult, ask myself, but what would I have wanted them to do, right? But so I think, first of all, it comes back to the individuals, right? We've said this ad nauseum. We're going to keep saying it, but it's not going to be a big police knock down the door and come in and raid the situation. It's individuals. It's parents, it's coaches, it's teachers, it's school secretaries, which is something we will talk about more,
right,
that notice the signs and that can cultivate a relationship with that child to be able to have enough information to earn the trust of the child, to then hear enough of the story, to carry enough of the story to then make the phone call and do the right thing. And a lot of the time when we talk about cultivating relationships, no offense to the men who are listening, we need more men in this fight with us, but it's women who are going to be doing that, right? Who are maybe going to be cultivating those relationships. But again, if you think about a whole generation of people, because again, 1 in 6 men, but if you think about a generation of women who have this unresolved trauma, given how prevalent it is, it's kind of like, okay, what does that look like? So I think for me, noticing that before I met Lori, there was a situation in my, before I met Lori, when I was very much boxes were closed, not at all. A kid in my life who I had really big concerns about. All of my red flags were going off. All of the spidey senses were like, this is not good. This is not right. But it's a cycle. It's a cycle of being triggered by the spidey senses and then feeling like, okay, but so like, I don't want to look at it because I'm triggered, but also I have to look at it because who else is going to help this kid if I don't? But also, are my spidey senses and my triggers causing me to see something that I could be misinterpreting because I'm triggered by something else, right? But then it's like, no, it's, I know it because I have seen it, I've felt it, I've been there. And so it's, trusting that. But I also was taught never to trust myself. And when I did trust myself as a child, that was a terrible mistake. But again, it's so glaringly obvious. And my gut tells me that something is off, but also it's triggering me. And so I don't want to look, right?
It makes total sense.
It's a cyclical, right? And so it really takes an active noticing that thought process to be able to then say, and also additional support, right? Like, should the situation come up again in my life at this point, I probably would have a very similar reaction because I do have all of these triggers. But again, I have somebody in my life to go to and say, hey, this is what's going on. What do you think? There's been situations where I've been concerned about something and being able to talk it through with somebody, but not everybody has that, right? There's generations of women, of people who don't have a Lori, who don't have the proper things in place to be able to process through their own trauma. So now what does it look like when those people are the helpers, right? Mm-hmm.
Right. When that person is shut down, again, maybe it is a coach. So maybe it is a man who is like in the position to potentially show up for a child. Maybe it is the school admin staff. Maybe it is the cafeteria staff, the lunch lady. Maybe it's the school nurse. Maybe it's the church worker. It could be all kinds of people. But if that person is carrying around their own unresolved history, honestly, feel free to correct me, but what I think is that children who are carrying trauma of their own also have this spidey sense of like, is this person able to hold it?
Yeah.
Right. You had every reason not to come back for a second appointment, but you picked up on something that told you that even though you had seen me on the screen at church, that I was at least worth giving a second shot to.
Yeah.
Right.
Speaking of the church, the Christian Evangelical Church makes this whole thing that we're talking about even more problematic. Mm-hmm. Which again is why we keep saying, okay, so the church is maybe not a safe place to disclose. The church is maybe not a safe place to come forward. And in the evangelical church, women are taught, you know, that the right attitude is submissive, humble, peacekeeping. Barf.
Mm-hmm. I know. Because I wasn't raised in the church, maybe that's why I'm not those things.
Is that why?
That's the only reason
it's
why.
It's not the Jersey Lori thing.
Too.
Yeah. Okay. I was just curious. And then, yeah, with sexual abuse or with, you know, my trauma, this is taken to the next level with grooming and brainwashing of don't make a mess, don't make it an issue. And I think that's also part of it, right? Is like, it is that kind of programmed part of me that was like with this child in my life, like I see this, but what am I going to do? Because I don't want to make a mess. I don't want anyone to get in trouble. I don't want his parents to be blamed for anything. Like that's so out of my nature, which is also funny because now with our public platform, I keep being accused of making drama where it doesn't exist, but that is so out of my programming and nature that's insanity. Yeah. The church definitely makes this even that much harder because it is this feeling of don't ask questions, don't make a mess. Women and children, you know, are over there and you just deal.
My perspective is I don't think that that is really what the church is meant to be. I think that's what the American church has become in way too often. Again, please don't push back on the always or kind of like, well, please don't push back on that. But in practical reality, the inclination is to encourage women and girls to be in their space, in their box, in their quiet, meek, not difficult. Honestly, again, I've said it many times. My daughter is a spunky, spunky person. She is just a spunky person, as is Ev. Like, you know, they are kind of like cut from the same cloth, even though they never met each other. But yes, absolutely. she did not well received in the church. She was too messy, too real, too. Honestly, if she was having a bad day and somebody said, "Hi, Natalie, how are you?" She would say, "I'm having a really crappy day, actually. Thanks for asking."
Good for her.
Yeah.
But she should say that.
But that was not well received.
And it still
people
wouldn't
wanted
be.
It tidy.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I experienced that too. Like when people would be like, "Hey, I hear Natalie's, you know, how's it going?" You know, what people wanted to hear is, "Oh, thanks for asking. It's so much better." Yeah. When that isn't, because again, the apple does not fall too far from the tree. When they would not get that tidy answer, he would be like hemming and hawing and umming and owing because they did not know what to say.
Yeah. Honestly, this is maybe like we're off topic a little bit, but this is what makes being a trauma survivor or, you know, any type of, I mean, for Natalie, like just her difficulties medically and like all those things, it's what makes it very difficult to function in the small talk world. Christiana and I just had this conversation about it is physically painful and draining to have to just like make nice. There's no space for it when you're dealing with so much and with the upheaval of emotions and opening boxes and trying to kind of tamper down the triggers, but also like live your life. Like it's a lot. And so then you have someone who comes in and is like, "Hey, how are things?" Like, and it's like, I can't, like, it's just, it's not that I can't. I just, it's hard. It's really,
well, okay, so I'm thinking about that. Like, there are so many ways that people could say, "Hey, how are things?" It could be like, "Hey, how are things?" Where you know that they're expecting to be like, "Hey, it's great. How are you?"
Mm-hmm.
It could also be like, "Hey, how are things?"
Yeah.
Where you feel like they're like looking to suck in the drama. And then there's the authentic, "Hey, how you doing?" Like, wonder how you doing.
I feel like what I've learned through this process is that your circle just gets smaller, right? There's not a lot of space for stuff that's not supportive.
Yeah, because it's too hard anyway.
It is. Yeah, it is.
And so, you know, to circle back to our point that when there are people who have unresolved trauma of their own, it makes it really difficult for them to, in fact, even if they have the greatest desire in the world to, it makes it really hard for them to show up in a way that actually makes it feel safe for the child.
Right. I mean, I think our point is that there needs to be more awareness around that, right? We keep asking people to be helpers. We keep asking people to do the right thing. But is there enough education and awareness around, everybody knows the statistics. Everybody knows that you should do something, right? But like, where's the awareness and the education around what does that look like? What is going to be most helpful to the child? And who are the helpers that are out there in the world? And what does their life look like? And there really needs to be a big movement and a big change to these generations of adults, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're never going to change the tide of helping children if we can't address what's already happened, mm-hmm. right? We can't change the future until we've looked at the past, basically. Is how I feel. Is that like a quote from something? I feel like it might
probably.
Be. Yeah. Maybe like George Washington, who knows?
Just
I don't know. I don't know.
You totally just pulled that out of the air.
All of that being said, I guess, is just, it is Child Abuse Awareness Month. And so definitely the awareness of it happens. It happens here. It happens in your backyard.
And it's not just the kids whose parents are drug addicted or alcohol addicted or whatever.
And it's not just the fluffy, "Oh, it's Child Abuse Awareness Month. Let's whatever." It's a real thing. There are children who have been horrifically abused and who are currently being abused. And it is taking a very hard look at what would you do? I guess here's my ask for this episode. What would you do about it? Right? We keep saying people say they didn't know what to do. So think about it, right? I ask myself that all the time. Like, what would I have wanted people to do? And if it were me now as an adult at 35 years old with my own children who have friends who are now coming into my world and into my home and into my life, what do I think I need to do? Right? I think that's an important question for people to ask. And is there anything in my past or in my world that would make it hard for me to do the thing that I think I should do?
I think we need to be able to look at that with both compassion and determination, right? So compassion for, yes, as a survivor, that is really hard to manage your own triggers and show up for someone else. But also the determination to say, okay, I am determined that I'm going to do what I got to do to be able to show up in the life of a child in a way that meaningfully impacts how they feel and their outcome. Because that changes everything for somebody to show up, really show up in a meaningful, persistent way.
Yeah.
Can change everything.
Everything. Yeah.
So one of the things that, like, just as a side note, what part of what we understand in the clinical community is that a child who has been abused is more likely to go on and be in vulnerable situations, to be involved in domestic violence, to have their child unfortunately be sexually abused, to end up in drug and alcohol situations, to be further victimized themselves, to be raped in the future. Again, the woman that you were referencing sexually abused as a child and then raped again as a young adult. I think you said she was a teen. The statistics bear that out. And so if we show up for a child, we're not just showing up for the child in that moment, but we're potentially preventing multiple layers of trauma on top of trauma on top of trauma.
Right.
It matters.
It does matter. Yeah, it matters. There's a huge change, a wave of change that needs to come on a lot of levels.
We got to be willing to make a mess. Like, yeah. Honestly, I feel like we know there are more people that are kind of in support than are against, but some of the people that are against, what they're against is the mess that's being made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Everybody is against child abuse.
Right.
But not everybody's going to stand for the victim that's right in front of them. Not everybody's going to pick up the phone or do the right thing or cultivate the relationship or X, Y, Z, fill in the blank when it's too close to home.
So, or too hard.
Yeah.
Or too messy or too whatever.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. Right. The adults in a child's life have to be the ones who they keep coming back, right? They have to be the ones who double back to say, hey, you know, you said this the other day and I was thinking about what you said and, you know, can you tell me more about that? Or gee, you know, you were going to go home and kind of do A, B, and C, you know, how'd that go? Can we, like, is there something I can do? How can I help? Right. Are you willing to be the adult that doubles back? And we're talking about that in a child's life, but how about showing up for the survivors in your world today? It's the same thing. Like, I'm not always sitting around waiting for Kate to reach out to me to say, hey, I'm having a bad day. I'm inclined to be like, hey, I know, like, we had this event this weekend. How are you doing with that?
Mm-hmm.
Right. That matters.
Yeah, it does. I think with the doubling back too, I just want to add that, I think doubling back with the child is important too, because I think especially in my experience when if there was a parent who was concerned, they might double back with my parents. But when the caretakers are the abusers, that does exactly nothing. So
worse than nothing.
Worse than nothing.
You now less safe.
Yes, exactly. And that was actually always my fear in trusting somebody and opening up to them, was that there would be a concern and then they would go around me to my parents because I was a minor, because I was a child, because that's always what happened, right? So I think doubling back with the child and getting more information, getting clarification, I think that is maybe where it's important to have that relationship that you might be able to do that. Because, yeah, I think it's easy to say, well, I know that kid's parent, right? Mm-hmm. I think that if I'm really concerned or I hear something that's whatever, maybe I need to double back with the child, not the parent, and just see what's going on before I take next steps.
But that also requires us to be able to get our mind around the possibility that these really terrible things actually could happen, even if we can't see it.
Yeah.
Right.
And with people that we could never imagine, right? With people that are our friends, the people that are close to us, people that go to our church, people that are relatives, like
leaders in the community,
getting past that point of saying no, couldn't be them, right? So I'll just ask their parent what's going on with them. I mean, again, that is how the narrative was so easily spread. Any adult that noticed anything would go to my parents and say, hey, I noticed Kate had bruises around her neck. And they would say, she's dramatic. She fell, she tripped, she had a horseback riding incident, you know, whatever. You go to the parents. But when the parents are the problem, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And the statistics are high for it being a close
parent or a caregiver. Right. Yes.
Right. But so we shouldn't have to see it for ourselves, right? Nobody is questioning whether or not there are child soldiers in Africa. We know that it happens. Nobody's questioning whether or not there are women who have been raped in Afghanistan. nobody's question. Again, I've not seen that. I've not been there. I've not seen it. Nobody's questioning whether or not there are children dying of starvation and waterborne illnesses in Sierra Leone, even though I've never been to Sierra Leone. I know that it happens. Mm-hmm. But why do we act as if I did not see the sexual abuse happen, if I did not see this parent do the things, then no, I'm not going
to
believe it.
But I think it comes back to the whole, like, it's over there, yeah. Right? We don't have to think about the children that are dying in Sierra Leone because it's over there. This is not different. Everybody is against child abuse. There's sure. not a single person in the world other than the offenders themselves who is not against child abuse. Right. But how against it are you when it's right here?
Yeah. Okay, before all of this, the yeah. evangelical church was prepared to be like, oh, the Catholic Church, boy, over there, they've got it all wrong. Isn't that horrible that they spent so many decades covering up and protecting offenders? Isn't that terrible? Over there, right? Mm-hmm. Or those polygamous cults. Oof, boy.
Even in the evangelical church, though. Oh, the Southern Baptist Convention. Mm. In the South, it is very bad. They're covering up. They have lists of victims, lists of offenders. How dare you think it's not happening up here, right? You think it's not happening across the country? Mm. But it's easy to say, oh, Southern Baptist Convention, oh, the Catholic Church, oh, the polygamous cults, right? It's happening.
It's humanity.
Across the country, right? Across the world. But people don't want to face that. So,
and do your own work so that you can be the person who shows up for a kid.
Yes, do your own work. Okay, so our next episode, so coming up soon, that's a good way to put it. We want to talk about the statistics and the prevalence of commercial sexual exploitation of children, which CSEC is the acronym for that. Mm-hmm. Also, we've had a lot of young people come to us recently who are kind of that college age generation that are concerned about specific offenders in our area, that are concerned just generally, like, what is happening to the world? It seems like it's on fire. And we're kind of like, yeah, it is. But we want to encourage that, I guess. We, you know, reach out to us if you are someone who is like, hey, this isn't right and I want to make a change.
I guess we don't want people to, we don't want the younger people to be disempowered, right? Yeah, it is a hot mess. So please don't listen to us and be like, oh, it's too much of a mess. Like, yeah. Which string do we pull first in order to be able to begin to make a change? No, we want you to be empowered to start somewhere. Yeah. Like, doing something is always better than doing nothing, and don't be afraid to, you know, yeah, start.
Yeah. And coming soon on our website, hopefully within the next month or so, we're going to have some action buttons for you. We're going to have some things that you can do. Like, here's a form letter to send to your senator. Here's an email to send to your university, that we want to kind of help cultivate some of that action for others to take. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's not just our voices in the ring. So stay tuned for that as well. So yeah, I think that wraps it up for today. Yes.
Child Abuse Prevention Month.
No, stay tuned.
If you or someone you know is stuck in a trafficking situation and needs help, please reach out to the National Human Trafficking Hotline by calling 1-888-373-7888 or text HELP, H-E-L-P, to 233-733.